calling 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Or go to give to WBAI.org online. You can pledge at any time. Why don't you do it right now? Not a bad idea. 516-620-3602. Now stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion coming up.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matt Kearney and Elise Lane. You know, protesting is a huge part of what Extinction Rebellion does, and we are naturally keen to learn about what makes for good protest. To help us explore this topic more today, we have Nora Maynard joining us on the program. Nora is the founder of Whole Tone Music Academy, which blends mind-body modalities with musical education. She has been a professional opera singer, a voice and violin teacher, choir director, and climate activist. She lives in Western Massachusetts in Somerville. Nora, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You know, I'm so glad you're here. One of the course descriptions in your Whole Tone Music Academy website poses the question, how might music help us change the world? So Nora, tell us, how might music help us change the world?
Well, really, I think in so many ways. I think I was drawn to music as a point of, I don't know how to focus my life, because it really seemed to draw so many things in together that would be relevant for just learning how to be the best human that we can all be. I think for one thing, as an activist, performing music, it can actually help us to express challenging ideas in a format that's easier to digest than regular speech. Also, when you are doing music yourself, then I think that that can help us, especially in a social context when we're making music together, that can just tell our nervous systems that this is a safe place to be. Just even the act of making sound while you're exhaling longer than you're inhaling is going to tell your body that it is okay to be together with people where you are right now. And so once we're tapping into that sense of belonging and connection, then that can start a feedback loop that helps our nervous system to act more out of a place of safety rather than from a feeling of fearful survival. I really think that it is partly due to the capitalistic culture that we have that creates a scarcity mindset for us. That means that we go about in a survival state most of the time, feeling really under-resourced. Mm-hmm. We're kept in kind of a reactive state, like we really need something all the time. Mm-hmm. So for one thing, that's totally unsustainable as a lifestyle, even before we even do consume anything, but it keeps us consuming. So once we start to break that feedback loop, partly just by establishing a sense of safety with others, then we can respond to our environment in just a more sane and humane way.
Sort of like a radical voice yoga. Right.
It's yes, sort of actually. Good call on that. Yeah. I recently got a certification blending therapeutic yoga with voice from a very cool teacher named Mark Moliterno, who does a yoga voice program. And that is definitely one of his aims as well.
That must be amazing.
So you're an expert in vocal technique. You've studied it. You've taught it. How, in an actual protest, how can people who are speaking or singing or chanting there avoid losing their voices? And this is not a metaphorical question about their place in society. I actually mean their physical voices. If they've been vocalizing for a while, there's a risk that their voice will give out.
Yeah, that is always a risk. And I think even for experienced vocalists, this can be a challenge. So I would say, for one thing, don't feel bad if your voice starts to feel tired after a little while. When you're outside, it is really difficult because your voice is going to feel like it dissipates and it just disappears as soon as it leaves you. So for one thing, have faith that if you feel that you're being resonant, if you can feel your voice ringing inside you, then you are being loud enough to be heard. You don't have to try to be louder than everybody else. Second of all, drink a lot of water, or you know, hydrating beverage of your choice 45 minutes or so before you expect to start using your voice, because it takes a good 45 minutes for that hydration to actually reach your tissues, to actually reach your vocal cords. Otherwise, you can drink water and it'll help relax during the whole process, and that'll still help to relax your larynx. That's still great, but in order to actually be hydrated, you want to be hydrating 45 minutes before. And let me also give you just a couple things you can look for keeping your vocal technique good during a protest. For one thing, I was mentioning feeling resonance. So you can look for a feeling of resonance in your mouth, you know, and you don't have to feel like you need to send that all that sound out too far away from you. Feel like you have a cave of resonance inside of you. It's inside of your mouth, and that'll help a lot. Like, instead of saying like, go, where you're breathing out extra air to get the sound out. Instead of that, you can feel it hitting the roof of your mouth and say like, go, and that kind of round go that you'll kind of feel resonating through your face bones. Another way that we often try to be heard is we send our necks and our heads forward so that to try to help our voices. And unfortunately, that's an instinct that a lot of us have. It isn't that helpful. So you can just watch for that, or you could put your hands behind, like right behind your head, and rest your head back into them and then see where your breathing goes. It might go lower and that might be good. And then, you know, resting your head back, you won't stress out your neck, and that can help your voice to relax.
In addition to Extinction Rebellion, you're involved with a group called Protest Choir. What is Protest Choir?
So Protest Choir is a protest choir class, a group, an affordable sliding scale group class that I've taught a couple times. And I've also done one-off workshops involving this idea that I would like to offer, like the things we were just talking about. I would love to be more common knowledge for more activists. I really want people who are organizing, who are on the front lines, to have these healing tools be accessible to them so that their voices can be amplified. So Protest Choir class is the idea that once we start having some songs in common, then for one thing, we can do that thing where we can stand in solidarity together and have more of that feeling of belonging and togetherness. Also, then it's going to help people to have a reliable sense of their voice that they can take into a protest, as we were just saying.
Cool. Now, in an interview on the Protest Choir, you stated that when it was first organized, the choir was, quote, only for people who were queer, trans, and people of color, because I felt that's where there was the most need. And those are people who have been politically engaged for the longest and whose voices I want to amplify the most, end quote. Can you elaborate on that just a bit?
Sure. When I first started getting into activism, I kept learning that people that I knew who were queer or trans or Black or people of color seemed like they were in general more engaged and had been for a longer time than my friends who were more white. And I noticed that some people who had been involved for longer, it seemed like, I don't know, I seemed like maybe they were getting a little bit exhausted of being the only ones there. So while I would really like to encourage more people to get involved, I also wanted to give more tools for regenerative culture, basically, for people who seem like have been there the longest. I know often, and these are people, you know, due to the capitalistic culture I mentioned earlier, people who are queer or people of color often are even more under-resourced. And so I didn't want to be asking for as much money as I often would from a person who's like, let's say a white cisgendered person who has a tech job of, you know, and who is definitely, there are quite a few people in that category who can pay a higher rate for a voice lesson.
Right.
And so while I like to bring people in who are, you know, in a more, let's say, a more academic, higher paid sphere into these talks about how do we heal ourselves and how do we heal the world. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to make sure that these healing tools are getting out to people who are more under-resourced.
Fantastic.
What happened in the world that inspired you to get involved in climate activism and ultimately in Extinction Rebellion?
You know, I've been wanting to get involved for a little while in some way. I was kind of floundering a little bit at first. I'd say in my attempts, and like I'd say somewhere 2015, I wasn't quite sure where to start. But then I think it was really the fires in the Amazon that really tore my heart out. And I just started desperately looking for where I could show up. I had already heard of Extinction Rebellion through a good friend of mine, Sophie Michaud, who had done some, been a little bit involved with music for XR, XR Mass. So that was a place that I looked. And then I noticed that my, somebody who became a friend who I work closely now with was leading his first rally, it turns out, for, about the fires in the Amazon that really got me to go out. I mean, I made posters when I was in second grade to try to defend the rainforest. And unfortunately back then, my teachers and elders, I think, didn't quite know how to channel that energy somewhere that would really be helpful. Instead, you know, I was encouraged to keep making flyers, but, you know, then there was nowhere to plug in at the time.
Did you go to Standing Rock protests?
I did, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I went there in 2016, and that was over Thanksgiving. I had a thought that it might be meaningful to help out in the kitchens there. Kind of as a statement, you know, myself as a white person, it felt like a decent act of service. And it ended up being a little different than I thought it would. When I went there, they didn't want help in the kitchens as much as they wanted me to be on the front lines and to be a, you know, a very, especially woman appearing white face that would be showing up alongside Native people and showing the police that there were also the people that they really want to be defending that also a lot of us are showing up. So that was a place where I was asked to put myself in the front of the action, which I did not quite expect.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI and the Pacifica Radio Network. This is Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane, and we are talking with Nora Maynard about song, activism, music, and protest. Nora, you and I met at a protest event in Weymouth, Massachusetts. Could you tell us what the protest was that day and what happened to you there?
Yes, well, we were protesting the Weymouth gas compressor because it's destroying the shoreline and bringing up terrible noxious gases and ruining things for the residents there. And also, you know, we need to at some point cut off our dependence on fossil fuels of all kinds. There's no need for this. It would only even be a transitional fuel. And anyway, there's no need for it. So I went there to protest this monstrosity. And I was part of a group that had really, I think, very well coordinated the action for that day. Even though you can never predict exactly what's going to happen in a protest, but we had a pretty good plan and managed to move on the fly when things changed a little bit so that the people who were putting themselves at risk for arrest, myself included, were the people that were taken in. And so I got arrested that day. That was my first time ever being arrested. And I think that, you know, we did it in a way that, lucky for us, no one was hurt in that process. We just showed our dissent, and we were lucky enough to also be treated without violence by the police.
If I remember correctly, you were blocking a delivery truck at the time, sitting in its path on the,
yes,
you know, paved pathway up there. And that truck, I don't know if we know exactly what was on it, but it was going to be delivering materials to continue constructing the compressor station.
Yes, we were only blocking the supply road, not the main, not the main highway or anything.
Right.
So we weren't stopping any traffic that might have been going, you know, somebody taking their child to the playground had nothing to do with them. We were only blocking things that were coming in to actually work on the station. And that was one thing that really made me want to be involved. I felt like all that we were doing was saying, you know, you need to stop working on this one thing.
And what was the experience of getting arrested, taking into police custody, going through that process? What was that experience like for you?
It was, you know, I think it was strangely tolerable. Oddly, I felt pretty well prepared for it by the legal team, by some of the rehearsals that we had had, by the nonviolent direct action training that we had had. And, you know, I was not quite prepared for how many times they would condescendingly tell me that I was harmless. That was really annoying.
The police are telling you that you were harmless?
Yes. They're like, well, we don't have to worry about you. You're harmless. And I'm just like, you go ahead and think that. I'm going to try to stay quiet here. And so, you know, I think that can be both part of the secret power of small white femme people like myself. And also, you know, it means that we can put ourselves out there. Yeah. Strangely tolerable, I would say. Still.
Well, you know, protests, as you kind of inferred before, tend not to be highly rehearsed and scripted. And sometimes there's, you know, downtime. And Matt tells me he has seen you manage those situations really well at protests. How do we make it feel like things aren't dragging, you know, at a minimum, or even better, like things are moving at a good pace and even that they're fun?
Yeah, I think if it is a theatrical action, then keeping an eye for where there's going to be transitions that need to happen. To be honest, taking an improv class is what people should really do.
Why is that?
Because you learn how to think on your feet and stay creative when you don't know what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Once again, that's actually getting used to that nervous system state of being a little bit sympathetically activated, but knowing that you are bigger than that feeling of slight fear. And then, you know, you learn how to work with that energy and act in a way that's going to, you know, act for the benefit of your whole troop. Cause you're thinking about a group that's with you improvising at the same time. So I feel like my own acting and improvisation experience from theater actually helps an awful lot.
Interesting. Now tell me something other than, you know, taking sort of an improv class or practicing improvisation. Do you have any tips for people doing a protest for how to keep it energetic and feel positive?
Tips. We want tips.
You want tips. You want tips and tricks for right now. I understand. You know, I think, having a team, for one thing, you're probably going to have a team. So you want to establish maybe a little bit before the protest, like if things are slow, I'm going to like give you this hand signal. And hopefully there's maybe two or three of you that are doing this, you know, and then you'll look at one of those other people and say, things are a little slow. I'm going to do a song now, you know, and or something. And that'll maybe you have a hand signal. Maybe you're just shouting at them. I would say, you know, giving things like 5 seconds of downtime before you do something is often a good thing to see if there's something else that really wants to bubble up, you know, rather than filling every single second. But then, you know, let's say that it's like a speaker has talked and then you notice that they're going to be changing over the sound system or something. And so then you're like, oh my gosh, I see like they're going to be fumbling with things for the next few minutes. That could be totally awkward. So instead of that, I'm going to start some chants. And then, you know, often you can just do that and the people who are fumbling with the microphones will be very appreciative. So keeping an eye out for if somebody looks like they need a second to get their script or to, you know, or to pick up a different megaphone or whatever, you give them some cover. And you can like start some chants. And then if it seems like they need a little more time, Then you do a song if you've got one up your sleeve.
Now, you happen to have high level vocal training and you have professional stage experience. Does somebody need all that in order to help their local group with these topics we've been discussing?
No, absolutely not. I think that the sooner people get involved, the better. I think that one of the best things that a local activist group could do would be to just have a couple rehearsals and have more than one peer person leading songs and chants. And if you're not feeling ready to lead songs yet, then just do chants because chants are fantastic and they get everybody feeling things together, you know. And if you got somebody who wants to lead a song, awesome. Otherwise, chants are totally sufficient. But having a couple rehearsals so people try actually doing the exact thing they're going to be doing, using a megaphone so they get used to how close their mouth really should be to that thing, then those at least maybe three of you have agreed on what the rhythm's going to be for the chants, because that's one thing that can be tricky. Is figuring out how is this really going to flow.
Right. Now, on the Whole Tone Academy website, it states that the Whole Tone Collective is, quote, full of visionary teachers on the cutting edge of music education, blending mind, body, modalities, and mindfulness with music lessons. What is it about this blending? I think you kind of pointed to that in talking about chance. But what is it about that blending that is important at this political moment and specifically for addressing our climate crisis?
So I really think it's very important for establishing each of our personal health and sustainability as people before we can give really meaningfully to the world. If we can find, you know, that place of stillness and groundedness in ourselves, we're going to be able to make good choices about how we want the world to be. If we're sitting in this place of just fearful survival mode, then we can all, it's like we're wearing blinders, and our bodies will do that to us. We can only see what's right in front of us. We can only think for the next one step in the future. And we need to be thinking for the next seven generations. So I really think that we have to get right within ourselves. We have to learn how to take care of ourselves in a sustainable way so that we can create a sustainable world for the next seven generations. I really think that music education, it's kind of like yoga, because it like harnesses all of your motivation, all of your desires that can be somewhat ego-based, and it brings them back into like motivating you to do things that are really altruistic for all of humanity, ultimately, I hope.
So it's energizing, healing, and healthy. It's also regenerative. That's a buzzword that Extinction Rebellion likes to use. Would you get on board with that?
I would get so on board with that. And I also, I would love for people to think about the works of Pauline Oliveros, if that's not a name that you know yet. She does a lot with deep listening, especially in nature. So Pauline Oliveros, very important name, amazing composer, musician, and meditator. And I hope everybody will be able to look her up. You can get her PDF of deep listening exercises for free, and you can read about her philosophies. But a lot of it just involves going out into nature with some other people and deeply listening to them, listening to yourself, and listening to what nature is already giving us. You know, even without a television, without a cell phone, there's a lot of beauty and information coming to us that's being given to us just from nature. And I really believe that the more we can be listening for that and be able to be attuned to all of the, you know, love and beauty coming to us from our environment, the more we can be in tune with be having sustainable lives that will support the earth as well.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI and the Pacifica Radio Network. Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney hosting, and we're talking with Nora Maynard about lots of things, including music, activism, song, nature connections, you know, nice specific topics. Nora, you have a song out called Open Book Test. Can you tell us why that song is politically relevant right now? And can you tell us where people can go find the song?
Absolutely. So Open Book Test, this is all about historical cycles of personal, intergenerational, and other forms of trauma that, you know, they're going to come back over and over again. And we have to learn how to deal with them in a way that de-escalates. It's a little bit about de-escalating, about finding ways to respond rather than react. You know, one of the phrases in there is like, how to bend, not break our necks, you know, and history is an open book sometimes because time will spiral to the next place where we can again look how to bend, not break our necks. I think we're being asked to do that all the time. I think right now is a really important time that we can learn from history books how to not devolve into totally fascist state, but we have to be really careful about it. The first verse, I have to say, some of those words came to me from a totally unknown source. I didn't know what they meant at the time, and I feel like now they're kind of clear. It's like, you know that day well, you always will. Set the window to the sill, I feel your pain.
Set the window to the sill, I feel your pain. You've been waiting all this time for a drop of rain, for blood to spill.
And I feel like now that makes some sense to me, even more than it ever has, because there's so many pockets of, as I was saying before, like really underserved people that really need change really badly. And some people are asking for more fascism and demanding it with violence.
Yes, they are.
And I think the, you know, a lot of the rest of us who want change just feel like there's another path that could be so much, so much better.
Nora, this has been great. Thank you for talking
with us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, sure. You can find that song on Bandcamp, by the way, under my my songwriter title, which is Surefire Cure.
Bandcamp, Surefire Cure. Thank you, Nora.
Thank you, Nora.
Thank you also. Very nice to talk with you today. Thank you for having me.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
The next meeting of WBAI's local station board will be Wednesday, March 10th at 7 p.m. With this spring season, the LSB looks at how WBAI, which has been navigating the operation and economic challenges posed by COVID, will navigate into the future. There will be an opportunity for public comment. That's the meeting of the WBAI Local Station Board Wednesday, March 10th at 7 p.m. The meeting, held through the Zoom, can be accessed by calling 929-205-6099 and entering the meeting ID 922-457-2995. That's 929-205-6099 and entering the meeting ID 922-457-2995. The telephone number to call is 929-205-6099. The meeting ID is 922-457-2995. A link to instructions, which includes the listening over the web and submitting written comments, is available through WBAI's main webpage. And if you miss an LSB meeting, you can listen afterwards by going to pacifica.org.
Previous program was Extinction Rebellion, heard right after the WBAI Evening News on Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. Stay tuned for We Only Want the World with Sansara Taylor. That's coming up in about another minute or so here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. And while we have a little bit of time before we go into the next program, I just wanted to make an appeal to listening audience out there. If you haven't done so, and if you do have the means of doing it, please consider becoming a financial supporter to this radio station by calling 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602, or go to give to WBAI.org online. As people should know, is that WBAI is solely supported by listeners like yourselves. We do not take any kind of corporate endowments or any kind of government endowments. Until further notice, we don't even get money from the CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Only you, listeners like yourselves, continues to support this entity that has been providing you a unique perspective of the world since 1990.